Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners in whichever part of the world you may be calling in from. We have listeners from London, from Russia, Australia, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Senegal, France, India, South Africa, and of course the USA. Bienvenue tout le monde. We're very happy to have you with us. Welcome to the AB Teleforums, where the local connects to the global. Now, this is a very special edition of the African Health Dialogues in collaboration with the SDG, Family and Social Life, Youth Initiatives, Anti-Violence Against Women's Act, and other programs under the auspices of African Health Dialogues. African Health Dialogues focuses on the strategies that are improving healthcare systems for communities. Our raison d'être, that's our reason for existence, is based on the need for improved access to adequate healthcare in African communities. This has long been a concern to researchers, development agencies, health administrators, and planners, both inside and outside of the continent. My name is Regina Askew Williams, a registered nurse practicing in New York, United States of America, hosting today's dialogue. I am also the Director of Health Affairs and a board member of the African Views Organization. I am truly honored and humbled for this opportunity to serve a purpose larger than ourselves. We believe that only through value-based information exchange system can effective functioning health service, reliable supply chains for medicines, equipment, and quality of life be improved for underserved communities of Africa. Our discuss today is somewhat somber. There is an urgent need, a very urgent need, to encourage more disclosure on rape and other sex crimes that befall vulnerable groups, especially the women folk, and most heartbreaking, the children of Africa. The current situation of silence and stigmatization that follows rape and sexual abuse victims leaves too much room for perpetrators to continue to unleash this violence with impunity, thus exposing more people to victimization. This climate enables the impetus for exploitation of the victims and manipulation of the burden of guilt, which brings another dimension to this very important topic. Before we go any further, or shall I say, as she joins us, I will be bringing to you our panel of experts. As they call in and join the program, I will be introducing them to you. But the star of today's program is a brilliant young artist who is a native of Nigeria, but currently resides in the United Kingdom. She bravely defied all odds, did not care about the stigmatization. She stepped out of the shadows and said no more. She produced a short biopic which chronicled her journey through the terror of such an experience. She traveled from victim to survivor. Now, from her position of success, she serves as a beacon of hope and a voice to the voiceless. Her biopic, Silence is Not Golden, tells it all. Please find time and watch her production on her Facebook page and also on African Views Dialogue. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be welcoming Ms. Diana Charles from London to the program. Okay, our topic today is about rape, and we are focusing on a production, a brilliant production.
Hello.
By Ms. Diana Charles, who is trying to join us, as you can hear her. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like she can hear us.
Hello.
So when we're able to sort that glitch out, we will explore this biopic, this brilliant biopic she put together. She got a few people who have had the misfortune of experiencing this terror to come together and speak out against this sad situation on our hands. And we'll be exploring that as soon as she joins us. But in so many venues, a lot of people have wondered and have spoken out against this issue of rape. The main crux of the situation is, what is rape? What is rape? Now, most of the answers I get when I speak to people about this is trying to blame the victim, trying to justify the situation. Nobody is really there for the people who have had to suffer this egregious act. But I would like to ask my viewers also today, what do you consider as rape? in Nigeria, when you talk about rape, they ask you, they look at it from an angle that women are owned by, you know, whoever paid their bride price or whoever married them, and as such, they have no rights to say no. They have no reproductive rights, or they have no rights to their body. It's like whoever, you know, married them or whoever is in a relationship with them owns them. I would like to explore that mindset also on the program today. Now, the United States Office on Violence Against Women recently had to revise the definition of rape for a nationwide data collection, ensuring that rape will be more accurately reported nationwide. The change they made sent an important message to all victims that what happens to them matters. And it sends also a message to the perpetrators that they will be held accountable for their actions. The previous definition of 1927 was termed forcible rape, and it only included forcible penetration of a woman by a male, and it stopped there. But the new definition expands to cover so many things. It expands to cover no matter how slightly a body part touches the body part of an unwilling woman, or if there is oral penetration by sex organ of another person without the consent of the victim, it is a crime that will be punishable by the law. They went further to include definitions like date rape. We hear young people going out today and dropping stuff in drinks and people getting drunk and, you know, getting raped. We hear of young men in fraternal clubs, like, you know, these clubs we hear about getting together and thinking that it is a rite of passage to rape a woman. We hear of gang rape. We hear of spousal rape. At this one, a lot of people laugh. They say, how can a husband rape a wife? But it is possible, and it is punishable by law, at least in this part of the world. The rape of children is especially sad, and it is a crime, not only against the society, against humanity. There is also statutory rape when a person who is not of age is forcibly sexually exploited. Prison rape is also considered a crime. Payback rape, war rape. We have heard about war rape, especially across Africa, in the Congo, in the Sudan. We will be talking about that also. We have heard of rape by deception, corrective rape, custodial rape, all kinds of rape. I would like my viewers today to tell me what they think about this situation. Okay. And the reason of our discourse is very far from victim blaming. We're not just getting together to jaw at the mouth and make noise. We want to sit down and rub minds to bring out salient points on how we can better handle these issues and correct this mindset in our society. Despite the stigmatization and the shame that comes with rape, a lot of people, this is very silent, and I do not really like to be talking to myself, so I'm expecting that my listeners will call in and say something, especially will be able to sort out our technical difficulties and have Ms. Diana Charles call in and speak with us. Okay? Diana, are you here with us now? Hello, okay. Ms. Charles?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Oh, great, 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 great. Welcome to the program. We have been talking about this brilliant video you produced, and it was so motivational to me when I watched it. I was immediately moved to make sure that I be a part of that movement by spreading this video as far and as wide as I could take it. We are very excited to have you with us, and please, you are very welcome. Before anything else, I salute your courage to come out of the shadows, guns blazing, to shatter this conspiracy of silence. Great job. Now, one look at that video gave me goosebumps, and I'm sure it gave a lot of people who watched it goosebumps. But I am prompted to ask you why. I mean, silence is not golden. Your video says it all, but I want our listeners to hear directly from you. What prompted you to embark on this journey? I know because of the shame and stigma, many victims seek therapy and try to get on with their lives as much as they can, but you have decided to sucker punch at it and come out guns blazing, devil may care attitude, and, you know, take it by the horns. What prompted you to do that?
Well, first of all, I would like to say thank you very, very much, Regina, for having me, and I really appreciate you reaching out to me, so that means a lot to me. And then, obviously, to answer your question, you mentioned something about victims seeking therapy. And I have to speak, being a Nigerian and being raped in a society in that kind of environment, the truth is that when you keep silent, most of the victims do not seek any therapy, they don't seek any help, and they don't get any help in return, because we have this sweep it under the rug, keep quiet, and just move on with your life kind of mentality,
yeah.
And that is the fact of the matter. So for me, breaking that silence, basically I'm speaking out to the victims to seek help and break that silence, because when they keep silent, they don't even speak to a doctor, they don't even speak to anyone, they don't speak to their family, they don't speak to their friends, they literally just die in silence, and that's, for me, that is my angle. It's a message directed to the victims.
Yes, die in silence. Isn't that very sad? Now, it looks like I'm jumping the gun. Let me introduce you properly to everybody that is listening. Could you tell our viewers, I said it before, that you're a young artist who lives in the United Kingdom, but let us hear from you who you are and what you do.
Well, I am, like you said, I'm an actress and a new producer, and I've just started producing my own movies, and I live in London. I'm also a banker, and my name is Diana Child, so that's pretty much me in a nutshell. I'm just a simple, normal person just trying to make a difference.
Simple, normal, who made this amazing video of Silence is Not Golden. That's not simple. That's not just normal. You are one in a million, and again, I salute your courage. Okay. I hear you say something like, living in Nigeria, people do not speak out. There is a conspiracy of silence. And I totally agree with you, because there have been so many women we know who have decided to embrace the forever good night rather than let anybody know that they have been raped. They chose to die, to commit suicide, to kick the bucket, and, you know, just throw in the towel. To them, we say, rest in perfect peace, and it's such a sad situation. But for the survivors, they do not have to go that way, because so many people are speaking out against this, and initiatives like yours should be showcased to the world, should be encouraged and applauded. And I hope that you will see us in African Views going the distance with you as we take this message across. Now, there is a never-ending debate of what is rape. What would you consider as rape? Because a lot of people believe that when a man forcibly engages in a sexual act with a woman against her will, that is rape. That's the ABC of rape. But then again, there are so many facets to that situation. It seems to me when there is an unwilling partner, that right there makes it rape. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that sometimes people think that because they don't use force, they feel that they haven't raped a person. Just mentally getting someone to succumb when someone is obviously, like, for as a young girl, you can, if someone that is much older than you, bigger than you, you know, in a way kind of like convinces you that you're doing the right thing, this is what you have to do, you know, buy you stuff, tells you they'll take care of you, and just basically brainwashes you and just, you know, preys on your innocence and your being so young. For me, I actually see that also as rape. I don't think that rape is when you physically slap someone or push someone down the stairs or beat them up. Just being able to just get them to, you know, to violate them in their body, for me, that, and I've had this debate severally with different people who try to justify or, you know, say what rape is. Some people say that the woman wants it. I've heard men actually say straight to my face, that, oh, shut up, she wants it, just plain hard to get, you know, and I can't understand.
Which brings me Which brings me to the next question, victim blaming. Victim blaming. It seems like rather than deal with the situation that an egregious crime has been committed, people are more comfortable blaming the victim. Or why was she there at that time? Recently, I watched a Nigerian comedian, talk about rape and what Nigerians see as rape. He talked about the girl going to the man's house, the girl laying down in the man's bed, in the man's shirt. He talked about, you know, how the girl was dressed. And, you know, everybody was laughing and thinking it was so hilarious that it should not be called rape. What do you think about that situation of victim blaming? From my own point of view, I think it's a very sad situation that will turn a lot of people away and drive them further into the shadows rather than come out and seek help. What do you say to that?
I agree with you once again, and I would like to also stress that whoever that comedian is, obviously the person is very ignorant, and that is the society they've grown up in, and that is what the society is about. The society will blame a woman anytime, any day before they point fingers at the man. And that is the reason why a lot of victims would rather die in silence than come out. Because the most painful thing for a victim is after you've been violated, you've been beaten up, and then you come out and people now blame you. That is the most painful thing. I think that is even worse than the actual act of rape itself. And that comedian, obviously, he has just buttressed my point further by saying all that and thinking it's a big joke. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional. I'm very upset by this. And obviously,
that's
there are people
right.
in the crowd, men and women, who are also laughing foolishly, thinking it's also a joke, forgetting that it could also happen to them. The funny thing is that some of them may have actually even been raped, but they feel the need to laugh at that time because they have to cover up that shame, and they think that is what is accepted. And that's the reason why a lot of people don't speak up, because at the end of the day, they will say to you, why did you wear a short skirt? Or why did he also go to his house? And that is, so in Nigeria, in Africa, that is not considered rape, because as far as the men or police or whatever concerned, the woman was asking for it. But like in England where I live, if a woman goes to your house intoxicated, drunk, and she spends the night in your house and you take advantage of her and she wakes up in the morning, she can report it to the police that you raped her and be very, very sure that the police will arrest her. And that is the difference between when a lot of people don't understand what rape is. They don't get it. They just feel because there was no force, because I didn't beat her up. How can you say?
Okay. So. Now you mentioned that you've painted a picture of the different societies. What would happen in one society and what would happen in another? Do I have Dr. Okpembe on the discussion? Do I have Dr. Okpembe with us? Hello, do we have Dr. Okpembe? Because I would like him to tell me, in a place like Nigeria, what resources does a girl have if she gets into a situation where she gets raped? Is there anywhere to go to? Is there who to turn to? Where do you go? Dr. Izzy, could you make a comment on that? If a girl gets raped in Nigeria, are there any resources for her to go to? Some people talk about church. Some people talk about the police, which I would say is a mistake, but let me not further elaborate. Dr. Izzy, you want to say something at this point?
Yes, I just came into the conversation just a few minutes
Thank
ago.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Dr. Eze, not Dr. Eze, I'm sorry. Thank you for joining us. It's very nice to have you with us. Please go ahead and lend your voice to this conversation. We've been talking about rape, victim blaming. Victims, rather than come out and seek help, hide in the shadows, which is why we are commending and applauding Ms. Charles, who has produced this brilliant video where people speak about their journeys and how they travel from being a victim to being survivors and successes, and send this message to other people who have walked that path, that there is light at the end of the tunnel. You don't have to keep quiet and suffer in silence. Let us be your voice, you know. Ms. Charles also painted a picture of what would happen in London if somebody got raped, and, you know, what would happen in Nigeria. So my question is, do you have knowledge of any resources that Nigerian women could, you know, avail themselves to if they got in a situation of rape?
Well, thank you so much, Virginia. You always have this, moderate this very interesting conversations, and it's really very, very important that we talk about those things. And I really applaud you and applaud the young lady that you had, that you also have on the show. What she's saying.
Thank you.
The reason I do is because I grew up in the two both worlds. So I had the opportunity to see what was happening in Nigeria as well as what happens here. There organizations and resources that are in the community, and our organization is also trying to find out those resources. But I know that they have a lot of women groups, and we're trying to encourage them to collaborate with you, with this kind of initiative that you have, and then so that those resources will be available. There are so many women groups here as well, you know, so many organizations, cultural organizations that are doing things. Their mission is focused in Nigeria or in Africa. So we can share that information once we are done with the research that we're doing. With African Views.
We
is World of Ebony Network, but we collaborate with different organizations, and we are looking for resources that would help what you are doing or what we're talking about now. As a matter of fact, we will be feeding the community this November. We'll be doing it every month in the villages in Nigeria. Across Africa. We're starting with Nigeria in a village in Ebem. And those are the things that we will be talking about. Those are the things that we are actually telling them right now, you know, those organizations that are already established or businesses or even local chairmen, and telling them that they need to support organizations such as yours. So we can make that available to you, to African Views, when that happens.
Thank you. Now, some people have talked about talking to your pastor, going to talk to your pastor in whichever church you worship at. Some people have suggested talking to the women's group. Like, you know, our mothers would have, like, a group. You talk to your mother discusses with the other women, they make a plan in the community, approach the village head, and make some kind of ultimatum against the victor, against the perpetrator, and deal with him. The community deals with him as a whole. But mostly what happens is, like, for example, like, there's been situations where robbers invade people's homes and rape the women and rape the female children there, and everybody pretends, like, don't say anything, nothing happened, you know, don't let anybody know that this happened to us. The situation in Nigeria is dire, and a lot of young women have experienced violence when they have dared
things
to
have
speak
changed.
Up.
Things are changing drastically. Right now, they have rape in different forms, like the baby factories. That's rape in a certain way.
The statutory
and the community.
And
people have been there, or people were there when these things were happening, and nobody's saying anything about them. And as a matter of fact, those babies that are made are even so. People go there and buy the babies.
So the discussion here is
and nothing will happen until you bring African Views, other organizations back to the table and re-examine what is currently on the table, you know, what value systems are left, if any. You understand what I'm trying to say?
I have to commend our executive director, Mr. Wale Ajibade, for the formation and implementation of the AVAWA Act. At this point,
That's
I'd like
right.
to ask him to speak a little bit on the AVAWA Act. This act is to give teeth to the steps or things that a woman could do to protect herself or to seek justice and redress for herself in situations or in negative situations like rape and violence. Wally, can you speak to us on AVAWA, please? This is our Honorable Executive Director, Mr. Wally Ajibade. Go ahead, Wally.
Thank you very much, Regina. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for raising this particular issue. As you know, this has been of great concern to all of us. And I'm very glad that the Anti-Violence Against Women Act covers this area as well. Before I go on, I just wanted to also mention that Diana Childs, who is on the phone, special guest today, seems to have a poignant comment on this particular issue. So I think maybe I'll defer for her to go first, and I'll talk about the impact of AVAWA on issues like this afterwards. Is that okay?
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Diana, you want to say something at this point?
When you were speaking earlier on to Dr. Eze about the values, African values, and the stigma and all of that, that just hit me because in Africa, obviously, we have this our values and this our cultures and morals where we like to give this impression that we're we're so religious and we're all saints and we're all righteous. And I think that is one of the reasons why when somebody is raped or violated, because you mentioned something about shame.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that is why some people will be ashamed and, people just feel like now you're stained and now you're second-class woman and, you've degraded yourself. So that is just when that was brought up, that kind of like hit home for me because I can understand why. Well, I don't understand it, but I see why some families or some people might feel ashamed or feel they've shamed their family by having such a stigma on them because of this high values, which don't exist in Africa, but we pretend that it exists. I think that's the reason. I just wanted to say that.
I would like to think that they exist.
I just, as it is, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wally.
Sure.
I would like to think that they exist. Wally, do you want to go ahead now? Or
yes. Yes, I.
Okay.
It's really important that we heard out, and it's funny what she said is so true. Thank you, Diana. That was incredible. But seriously, all jokes aside, I mean, culture is one thing, tradition is another, but the law is the law. And one of the things that is still in the works is how we implement laws around this very intimate crime. Many developing countries, including most countries in Africa, have ratified the CEDAW, that is the Commission on the Elimination of All Forms of Violence Against Women. They have a set of rules, and they have very stringent definition of every possible crime against women, among them, which is rape. And they have also made recommendations as to how it could be identified and how it could be prosecuted. So, for instance, Nigeria has its own law against those things, and those laws are very strict. I think to some extent there is life imprisonment for rape of children of underage children. Spousal rape, as you know, is still very not quite clear. I mean, there's a gray area because the spousal abuse, of course, spousal crime or spousal rape happens in a very confined private environment where it's your word against mine, except there is some kind of proof or obvious damage to the victim. So it's, this is, of course, one of the reasons we have the issue with someone like Bill Cosby, for instance. because it's hard to prove, especially in the after effect. But there are measures, psychological analyses, psychological counseling, interrogations that could help bring out the fact. And but you know, as you can imagine, this is not just a problem for the developing world. It's also a problem for us in America or anywhere else in the world. What Avawa is good for in this area is that instead of telling every different culture to adopt a cookie-cutter treaty or laws that protects women, it actually looks into that country's constitution and asks that country to provide a comprehensive plan as to how it intends to protect women, as it's stated in the constitution, because every constitution states it clearly that it will protect its women. So to do that successfully, you have to really understand the concerns of women. So that means, you know, women are the one who are going to have to come out and say, this is how we're violated and that's how we're violated and so on and so forth. Things like this is what had led to the creation or the redefinition or redefining of the of rape in the American law library, in the American women advocate just changed the definition for rape and to include all various modalities of which a woman can be violated. So I think it's important for us to begin to look into that. However, in existence right now, there are lots of laws that looks around it. The question is if people will go out and make a report. And that's a challenge everywhere. As Diana correctly mentioned, as you have mentioned before, it's quite critical that this, you know, we know what the stigma is. When somebody is raped, you go around the street, you go on the street and people point at you, oh, that's the girl that's been raped. So nobody wants to be in that position. So, of course, silence prevails this way. But so does the suffering. And that's how and why it's important to commend people who come out. And whatever we need to do to encourage more people to come out will help, because it would stop at least the third or the fourth person from getting raped if more people come out, because then there is a risk of exposure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Now, I was, you know, my mind was going to the fact that if we do not have bodies or organizations in place to protect the children or the women or even the men who come out to complain against being raped, it might not be a very wise thing to advise people to, you know, come out and speak out inside cultures that would, you know, like put themselves or their lives in danger. But if we can double up efforts and speak out and provide resources and provide organizations offices where girls can go, and then we use the rape kits like we use in the hospital to prove that there was a forcible entrance, or to listen to their story and analyze that situation and make a comprehensive report and then move on from there with laws or acts like Avawa protecting us. If Avawa can expand its parameters to providing this on ground in Nigeria, it would be a very welcome situation, not just in Nigeria, in other parts of Africa. It would be a very welcome situation, because I think things like that, resources like that, are a necessity at this point. Now, despite the shame, despite the stigma, despite the troubles, a lot of people, more people than ever, are coming forward to confront the silence in various ways. For example, Justine Masika, Bihamba, a lawyer and the founder of the Women's Synergy for Victims of Sexual Violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo, has gained considerable international recognition for providing legal assistance to rural women who were victims of wartime rape in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Denis Mukwege, a Congolese gynecologist, was awarded the European Union's Sakharov Prize in 2013, and he was nominated three times for the Nobel Peace Prize for his work on reconstructing destroyed sexual organs and providing psychological support to victims of wartime rape still in the Congo. The international community has spoken out harshly against the government of Congo and, against them for banning the documentary film titled The Man Who Mends Women, The Wrath of Hippocrates. His documentary focused on the surgeon's work and it forced the government to debate sexual crimes perpetrated by its army. But then again, it's not just the Congolese army. The Sudanese army also was accused of raping several hundreds of women and girls, and we saw those clips on the internet. And the United Nations African Union peacekeeping forces in different parts of Africa have also been accused of wartime rape. This is why the video that has been produced by Diana Tiles, Silence is Not Golden, is a very timely and very important tool to address the issue of rape and the culture of silence on sexual assault in our societies. This documentary is a touching reminder and observation of the pain and healing needs of silent victims of rape and sexual abuse in our society. We have to do something to keep propagating this production of Diana Tiles as far and as widely as we can propagate it. Now we have a caller from Kenya. We have Mr. Godfrey from Kenya, and also our darling expert contributor, Minnie Murphy. I would like Dr. Minnie to speak, after which I will call Godfrey from Kenya to say something. Or shall we start from Kenya, because that's very far away? Shall we start from Kenya? Mr. Godfrey?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and say what you have to say. Welcome to the program.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, very welcome.
I'm very happy today to be part of this great discussion. I've been following some of the points that have been coming up, and this is a really serious problem in Kenya, and especially in the rural parts of Kenya, where we have a lot of victims who have been raped and it has never been reported, or those who have reported but no action has been done. It is a very, very serious thing. And myself, I've been involved in two major campaigns around issues of rape, especially on youth. Girls, young girls, because currently I am coordinating a project that is supporting girls' education and also supporting victims of early child marriage, sex violence, and domestic violence as well. So what I wanted to say is that it is a serious issue, and
yes.
Thank you, Diana,
for
coming out and actually helping really break this silence. And I think we really need a lot of inspiration, especially amongst the rural girls in Kenya. I just want to share an example. Recently we had a conference. It was a conference on child marriage. And what happened actually is that the police were blaming the children officers. The children officers were blaming the parents and the guardians. Why? Because it came out strongly that there was a lot of things that happened. People know the truth up to some levels, and then they end up compromising. They end up compromising. You find maybe compromising maybe can be at the police level, where the police are bribed, maybe by the culprit who did the act, or maybe a scenario where the parents are bribed and then the girl just disappears, maybe is taken to another relative somewhere. It has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then that case just goes like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you find it reached the judiciary, at the judiciary level, and then somebody comes and compromises the whole case. And maybe the prosecutor says that, the girl is forced now that this thing, you have to discuss it outside the court, and the victim just say she was never raped. You know, she consented, you see. So it is crazy. It is really, really crazy.
And this girl,
they really need a lot of help. So what we are doing currently, as where I am currently, where I'm supporting, we are building, we are coming up with the Girls Empowerment Center. And within the Girls Empowerment Center, we'll have what we call a safe space. And we'll have like around 3 safe spaces where these victims, when they report these cases, they can be attended. We can also make sure that the exhibit is not tampered with, because that was also another issue. You find that a girl is raped. You know, in Kenya, if you don't have an exhibit, that is no case. So you have to make sure that the exhibit is not tampered. The girl, immediately after the act, she doesn't take bath. All the clothes that she has to be kept safely. All those have been tampered, because you find the same girl, she's raped, she goes home, she takes, she baths, and then she goes to the hospital. So the hospital, they say, we cannot help you because you have already tampered with the exhibit.
Okay.
So there is no case. And then also this girl, the reason why they fear even to come out and speak is because some of the victims who rape them are people who are very funny. They are very furious. They are very, like, you know, they are crazy. So they even threaten them. So they go back, they keep quiet.
All right. Thank you. And I want to commend you for your hard work for these children. And don't give up. And let us each continue to work hard towards bringing the needed, much needed help to these young women all across the societies in Africa. Dr. Mini Musi, I know you have to rush off to teach your class, but please say something to us before you have to rush off.
Thanks.
Dr. Mini Musi.
Thank you. It's always
a pleasure to have you. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for having me. And today is Sunday. I'm not teaching a class, but I had a prior appointment. Thank you so much. And thank you, Wally, and everybody else for putting this together. Thank you, Regina. What I just wanted to say is, unfortunately, rape is being used more and more as a weapon to subjugate women. And one of the major issues we have is, just like gender-based violence, rape is a form of gender-based violence. We have the stigma of the culture of shame, because it takes a lot for a woman to come and say she's been raped, because she's afraid. As there was a discussion earlier on, as when I joined in, I had the privilege of listening, to come in and say that she was a victim of rape. And in some societies, unfortunately, people have to be a witness that they, that they witnessed the rape the woman is claiming. So there are a lot of sociocultural and legal aspects involved with rape. I don't think, in my humble opinion, being a healthcare provider, there's no one shoe which fits all countries. So I think we need to have laws, yes, but sometimes the laws need to be different, or, the repercussions in different countries. So this is a big issue. And also, a lot of times, people are not trained in many societies
and also victimized.
To look at the issue of rape and how to talk to these.
Thank you so much, Dr. Murphy. Thank you. And thank you for coming on to spend some time with us.
No, Anita, thank you.
I hope you can stay for a few more minutes, because I would like to talk about the process of going from victim to survivor. I know that this process is not, this therapy is not available to a lot of people. I am not a specialist in counseling rape victims or rape survivors, but in listening to Ms. Diana Charles, who has so who has put together this brilliant biopic, I would like our listeners to follow us through these steps, and then consider some kind of way to, you know, get a level of therapy to, you know, to relieve themselves or share their story, and by so doing, you know, relieve the burden. But I'm going to go back to Diana again. Diana, right after your, I mean, you don't have to talk about this because we all deal with stuff different ways. If it's okay, okay, you can go ahead and talk about it. But when sexual offense is committed, when somebody has been violated, you go through so many emotions, thoughts, behaviors. Your relationships are affected. Yeah, everything is affected. Now, how did you respond to the immediate aftermath of that situation? Bearing in mind your own health, in terms of, you know, how did you take care of yourself? Now, somebody had mentioned that people don't wash away the evidence, but immediately somebody has been raped and they come to the hospital. We use a rape kit. We collect as much evidence as we can. True, but we immediately, as soon as possible, restore the victim to a healthier situation, you know, considering there could be a lot of transmissions going on. But let me give you the floor at this point. How did you handle the emotions and, you know, of the situation you found yourself in?
Well, for me, unfortunately, my story is an unfortunate one that I wasn't just raped once. I have a history of rape and sexual abuse, so it's not something I could deal with every single time. But when I got that, my mom was quick to obviously get me to hospital and do all the necessary checks on me when it came out to make sure I didn't have any diseases, and I bless God that I don't. But for me, at that time, how I dealt with it, because I was living in a society where silence was golden, I kept quiet and I moved on with my life. I tried to just put it at the back of my mind. But what I found out was that it affected me in a way that I became a different person, and it took me a while to look back on my life as a teenager and compare it and realize that it made me an angry person. So I found out that I used to get angry at things that I shouldn't. It's something I still struggle with till today in my daily life. I have days when I have extreme mood swings and I cannot figure out why. But obviously when you're traumatized for years, it's not the easiest thing to just pray, like, you know, they'll tell you in church in Nigeria to just pray and God will do it. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So for me, it's something that I kept dealing with, just putting it at the back of my mind, and I suppressed that part of my life so much at the back of my mind. But when I moved to England, I decided to move to England, getting close to a decade now, and when I moved to England, there was a day I was just sat down. I felt so hot, and I went to take a shower. And at that moment, I had a panic attack. I was in my bathroom, and I couldn't get out of the bathtub for about 15 minutes. I was there, curled up, shaking. It was as if I felt in that moment like I was going to lose my mind. I did not know who I can't explain it. But when I eventually came through and I got myself out, that was when the next day I went to the hospital, and for 1 year I saw a therapist. And that was the first time somebody listened to me. That was the first time someone actually took me serious. Somebody actually looked at me and realized that what has happened to me was a terrible thing that kneeling down and praying for 20 years cannot erase. I am a Christian and I believe in God, but the fact of the matter is that even if you kneel down and pray for 20 years, God does not give people amnesia. So you would not forget. You can never have amnesia from praying, because that would be a curse in you. So the truth is that when you face this kind of thing, you have to go to the hospital. You have to seek professional help. You have to, you just have to speak to a doctor. But unfortunately, I do not believe, I know people have said there are things like that in Nigeria. Maybe they are now. I might be ignorant, but I still don't believe that such things are in place in Nigeria. Because I don't think that people genuinely take it as serious as we. People don't believe that in Nigeria there's something like mental health. They don't believe that we can commit suicide. I tried to commit suicide twice. People see me now on Facebook, they see me and they see what I've achieved, and they find it hard to believe. But this is the true story of my life. But in Nigeria, people don't believe. As Africans, we don't take our lives because we're all lovely. So that is kind of how it affected me. That's just the tip of the iceberg, and that's as much as I can say.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I hope that if there are any of our listeners listening in, they would be able to key into some of the things you have mentioned. There are different people react in different ways to different things. But for a survivor, there's the crisis response, the time that you are trying to come to terms with what just happened to you. You're shocked. You're in shock. You're numb. You are shaking, you're eating more or less, or sleeping more or less, you're crying, laughing, or, you know, you just don't know yourself. And like you said, it is very important to seek help. Now, after the crisis, people go through a reorganization and disorganization. In this time, they just learn to cope day in, day out. They struggle to get their lives back together. And you see some people turn to self-medicate. Some people self-medicate. Some people drink and turn to drugs. Some people, you know, go through all kinds of things. They suffer physical flashbacks. They have disconnection with, you know, their bodies. They're really lost, and they have problems with intimacy. They're not able to hold relationships with other people, you know, because they cannot trust. Another reason why it is very important for people to go through therapy and experience the healing process. The healing process is slow, and it's a process where you try to regather your life by courageously moving forward. Healing is not about forgetting the rape, but it is. It's not about forgetting the rape or the abuse, although it is taking breaks from active healing work is very normal and very healthy. There's a balance between... Yes, go ahead, please. There's a balance between healing work and getting on with your life. Yes, go ahead.
Like you rightly said, healing is not forgetting. I just wanted to touch on that because this is that when you've gone through something like this, you never forget. It is part of your life. And one of the ways to heal, me as a person, is accepting it. For me, I decided to accept that this happened to me. This is part of my life. This is part of my past. There's nothing I can do to change it. But then you also have to look at yourself in the mirror and say to yourself that I have not done this to myself. This is not my fault. And I'm not. I am a victim. I'm not going to stigmatize myself. And I'm a woman, and I'm a strong woman. And that's what I have to do, because many years I suffered from low self-esteem. I used to say to myself in the mirror that you're worthless, you're ugly. I used to do that to myself. But one day I decided and I said to myself, you have to be able to realize and accept it in your own self. Don't let anyone tell you. Be strong and accept that this is not your fault by any shape or form. Don't let anyone, even if you're someone that dresses in the most provocative way, no one has the right to rape you. Wear a miniskirt, even if you're a bra and walk down the street. If any girl is listening to me right now, don't let anybody tell, even if you're drunk and you fall down the stairs, you are not still the one that caused it. The person is a rapist, not you. So I just have to quickly.
Those are the words of a survivor, an empowered healing survivor. And what makes me feel that you have come a long way is the fact that you have taken this negativity and built it into something very positive, something that will, you know, give a beacon of light and hope to other victims who might be wondering how they can deal with what they have experienced. And for that, again, we applaud you and we salute your bravery. And then we will go all the way with you in spreading this taking this video as far as we can take it. It looks like a lot of people joined us late, and they have a lot to say from different parts of the world. I do not know if we'll be able to take everybody's comment, but we will share this broadcast and the content of this broadcast online, and you would be able to go to africanviews.org and listen to this webcast. We have Dr. Okpeme. Dr. Okpeme, do you want to say something at this point? It's like we're winding down on the program, but we are very happy to have you. Dr. Okpeme,
thank you. I think that in a general effort to mitigate this issue of rape, I think we need to get men or women, I think both, whoever the rapists are, to understand what rape means. Because I think half of the people, not the violent pedophiles, but really half of the people that commit rape may not even know that it is rape that they are committing. And I think that we should really put a lot of emphasis and effort on education, that is educating both the adult and from the early age on what constitutes a rape. So I would like if we can just discuss that between ourselves, what we think.
And if anybody has anything to say to Diana, this is your chance before we let her go. But then again, Wally just asked a question. He said, what would make somebody, how would somebody understand what rape is? First of all, when a person says no, even if it is an act of putting up their hands, even if it is non-verbal communication of not wanting to participate in a sexual act, no is no. People might think it is not reasonable if I say that even if you're laying down naked with a partner and she changes her mind and says no at the last minute, you cannot justify her nakedness or her wanting it because she's naked with you. You cannot justify forcing yourself on anybody when they have told you no. That is the time to gather your self-control and remove yourself from that situation to avoid being labeled a rapist. Now, I was reading something about what goes on in the mind of a rapist. This is an entirely different conversation because today was about journeying from being a victim to a survivor. But I'm going to touch for a minute on what goes on in the mind of a rapist. In a nutshell, it is a lack of empathy, an inability to feel that the other person could be hurt, an inability to feel that the other person is a human being who has rights to say either yes or no to you. You're only thinking of yourself and your own gratification when you forcibly attack somebody or force yourself on somebody or have your way with someone. Now, it has also been said that many people who rape do not rape because they have mental health issues or whatever. They rape because they are themselves, they have been themselves victims of a vicious cycle of violence which predisposes them to wreaking this violence on other people around them, to make people feel the shame and the humiliation that they once were made to feel. Now, many rapists who have been interviewed have owned up to the fact that they have been in long-term situations of abuse from when they were very young to when they were old enough to remove themselves or old enough to do something to change their situation. They have been humiliated, violated, and they in turn turn around unable to deal with the difficult emotions that those things raise, the experience raise in them. They unleash this on other people to make other people feel the pain that they themselves have felt. But that is no excuse. So the first thing that we should teach our children teach our young men, teach, you know, our family and friends, is to feel empathy, to respect another human being, to know that it's not all about you. Whether you've been hurt or pained or abused or whatever, accept it, deal with it, get therapy, get help, and move on from there. It does not help you or anybody else to visit the same type of violence on another person. It does not help. So the first thing that the rapist must learn is to feel empathy, to have feelings, you know, of consideration and respect for the other person. I don't know if somebody else has anything to add to that.
This is Diana here. I just...
Yes.
For me personally, I cannot in any way understand why somebody would rape someone else. Because if I have to speak on that, I could also in turn go around and start drugging men and, you know.
I'm sorry, this is not funny.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm just
ahead,
trying
please.
To say, mm-hmm. The thing is that when people do things, they will always find a reason to, you know, justify, you know, why they've done what they've done. And I feel like recently I spoke to someone in Nigeria who quite recently was almost a victim of rape. And this person that almost raped her is a mature adult who has a company, who is, who is doing well. And so for me, I just feel like what you rightly said, some people don't understand what maybe rape is. And I think another way is because in a society, in a place like Africa, the men or even women who rape kids, because there are women who also, we must say too that they're boys, young boys who are victims of rape, and that is the truth. So even these men and women, yes, so we have to say that because I have male friends who were violated as kids, as young boys, and I must quickly say that. So these young boys who have been raped by their moms, by their aunties, the truth is that these people that do this thing is because they know that in a society like Nigeria or Kenya or in Africa, they can get away with it. We have to understand that it's because they know at the back of their mind. When the person that raped me years ago, he said it to me, my face, nobody will do anything. It's because they know at the back of their mind, they know in their mind they can get away with it. That is the reason why someone will rape someone. That is what I think is one of the major reasons why a rapist would do it in Nigeria, because they know they can get away with it. And that's why when they come to places like England and America, they struggle. They cannot understand. They cannot understand what's going on here. To them, it's like, whoa, what's happening here? Who are all these people? Because they cannot understand why they can't just press somebody down against the wall and just fuss. They can't understand it. To them, it's like, you know, they don't get it. That's what me, I personally think. It's because society allows them to get away with it.
Okay, so let's hope that people are not out here unable to understand why they cannot rape others. That would be just too much. Thank you. Thank
Let
you
me say
very
so.
Much. For Yes, go ahead, Wally.
Thank you. I mean, let's take a classic story like the Bill Cosby issue. I know this is tough, but let us just take it as a subject matter, especially because Diana mentions that. She mentioned that I can't just go around drugging men and doing whatever. So let's take this as a subject matter. If at that time, and we're talking about the 80s, where the culture really is very promiscuous and permissive towards sexual music and all kinds of acting out activities, and especially a celebrity figure, where there's not much to think about it other than the fact that anybody else who wants to hang around the celebrity wants something from them. And in the 80s, of course, it was. So if a man invites a woman or a woman decides to go with a man into a very private room that you have not known before, that you have no business talking, whatever the case may be, I mean, you just imagine what is going on in the mind of the man. And then at this point, you don't know if the drug that occurred was consensual or not. So it's, again, this issue of intimacy and a matter of your word against mine in that context. But I want to also just piggyback on what Regina said. that it is about empathy. And I cannot agree more. But how do we get there to the stage where men and women can have empathy of what is appropriate, what is truly said? Because you know the trend, this notion of no means yes, you know, because men always, I'm trying not to be gender specific here, but I mean, there are classic acts of rape where you intrude, you interfere, you attack somebody, subdue them, and then you had your way with them. Now, obviously, there is no question about that. That's rape. But there is another concept of rape where there is coercion, and the coercion is psychological, where you psychologically dominate and convince or coerce the other person into that act. And a lot can be said into this. Of course, you could use drug, but you could also use political power. You know, I would argue if Bill Cosby is a rapist in this sense, so is President Bill Clinton, because he might have used his political power to coerce a young person. So again, this is the gray line in this concept of victimization and understanding of what rape really, really means. So I think we really do need help here. But again, I can agree more that it's all about empathy and how we begin to instill that into the society. I think that's
it's
the challenge.
Shows like this one.
Yeah. And
videos like Diana's.
And videos like Diana's.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Thank you very much for your contribution. And I think at this point we have thoroughly bitten as much as we could chew in this topic. I would have loved a situation where Dr. Kwemba would talk about what is available on ground, the resources that are available on ground in Nigeria for young Nigerian children or young women and men who are in situations like this where they could go and get help. We have a lot of work to do. There are international organizations that are just waiting, willing, and able to help set these organizations up. And we should promote videos like Diane's to show that there are people on this side also who are ready and willing to, you know, lend a hand to build structures like that and provide help for young children in African communities who might need that help. Godfrey, please go ahead and say something before we close out. Godfrey from Kenya, please go ahead. Have we lost him?
Oh, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to say something about men involvement.
Okay.
Men involvement is a very, very key concept in ensuring that we reduce the issues of the incidence of rape amongst our girls. Because I think when men are empowered and told the importance of protecting or of respecting women or girls, then it can really help them as well. Because I think it's important, like what Diana was saying, it is important for men to understand what women go through. I know, yes, they know, but they should get it. They should be reminded. It should be emphasized every time to them. So they also understand that, yes, it's 5 minutes, how many minutes, but the aftermath goes for years and years and years. This one should really stick on their mind. So thank you very much, Diana, for coming out and really sharing this. I know we can still work together because we work with a lot of such girls, and I think they need to hear what other victims.
Yes, we might like to
share. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Diana was saying something.
Yeah, Mr. Godfrey, I said it will be my pleasure to definitely do that, to work with any organization that, because this is something I'm very, very passionate about, so I will be very happy to speak to, you know, if there's any forum to speak, and I'm very happy. I would love young girls to look at me as someone they can look up to so that they don't feel alone I'm ready to take the heat. The stigma they want to put on anybody, I'm ready to take it on behalf of everybody because I'm not afraid of myself. I'm very, very,
and we're solidly 100% behind you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah. So maybe I think we can hook up together and see how best can we work together to actually help these guys. Yeah.
Yes, we will.
Because
we will give you a
amazing
link to Diana through African Health Dialogues, and both organizations can collaborate from there. Okay, you can reach us through AfricanViews.org. AfricanViews.org, and then we will link you up with Diana's organization, and then you can work from there. Okay. I want to thank all. Hello, go ahead, Diana.
No, I was just saying thank you.
Hello, guys.
I want to say thank you to all our listeners.
Hello.
Even though you were. Hello, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Nike. Hi, Regina.
Oh,
Nike. How are you?
Director from London.
I'm on,
thank you for calling.
I know I'm on sabbatical, but this is very, very pressing and it's so interesting. I kept pinching myself here. I just tried to keep quiet, but then I have so much to say. But first of all, I want to really appreciate our guest today, Diana Childs. Thank you so very much for sharing your story and your experiences and empowering a lot of women out there and girls. But what I want to say, because I remember when I just tapped into the forum and I said something about men are also victimized, and I heard someone chuckled on the background and said, oh, men, guess what? Men are actually victimized. But my problem is, let's say, for instance, if you look at Diana's story, I'm sure she was actually almost like an adolescent when she was going through that. If we want to pick the story of, or the point, no, let me say the point that Auntie Regina raised when she said that we have to learn the word empathy. But how do you teach a guy to empathize with a woman? First of all, the gender struggle is one of the things that's contributing to this issue of being a victim of rape, because there is so much power given to men in a way for them to see women as a weaker vessel, as someone they can actually take advantage of at any time and point where they want to get what they want to do. And we've been so objectified to the extent that we are like human beings, women are just for men to be pride on or to, you know, to satisfy their pleasure. Because if you look back as much as looking back to the story of women before the emancipation of women, this is so much about, we're weak, so they can take advantage of us. But on a very, very painful part, this has got to do with me losing my head when it comes to children that are so young, say age plus, from 3 to 5, from 3 years old upward. You've heard about a young girl as young as 9 years old being pregnant. And this is my area of expertise because I'm like a training counselor and I've heard so many stories. A grandpa can raise his own grandchild. I've heard about that. A man that actually gave birth to a child can rape a child. And this is because they hold this power to shut that child up. And this is where a man can rape his wife and get away with it, because the way the woman sees herself, not as equal, but is subordinate to her husband. So that power already is given to a man to do away with whatever or whatsoever you want to do. And so then I mentioned the guest, Geoffrey, said something about men, this is just annoying. But if you want to look for the bottom line of the problem, it's still the gender struggle, honestly speaking. And the vulnerability of a child that you take advantage of. I've had a case whereby a man raped a young girl as young as 13 years old and said to that girl that if anybody should hear about this, you're going to run mad. I will make sure you run mad. And then this child was silent. And then let's go to the case of men. Now that homosexuality is something that has been accepted, before it wasn't accepted, but now do you know how many guys have been raped? And I said to this man, he said, women are still the one that are so, they're like more of victim, but guys are out there. and young boys are out there. And if you look back at so much as if you want to talk about the religious history, the Catholic people were as one of those people that were actually, you were meant to look after children, but you are the one that is molesting them. We've had so many cases about rape and victimization and, you know, yeah, forget about stigma right now. Stigma is more about, I'm too scared to come out, that these people will look at me. And we've heard about a girl just dressed up. Okay, look at this. Former, the Grace, you know Grace, what Grace, what's this woman's name? Mugabe's wife said, you can blame the girls the way they dress. That's why they got raped. Are you going to blame a child who doesn't even understand what looking sexy is? Or are you going to blame a boy child in China or in Philippines, in Italy, in India, where they get vulnerable and get raped for somebody else's sexual pleasure? Are you going to blame those kind of kids? So it's not even about a woman being a victim anymore. It's anybody can be a victim, but this always happens to someone that's holding the power over you. That's when they will take advantage of you. So we want to teach them how to empathize. First of all, they need to respect a woman. That what right you have is the same right that I have. But this is affecting a lot of in different atmospheric area. When you want to talk about geographical area, it's everywhere. You can't say Africa is bigger. It's because we are not speaking out. That's why we became like the ones that don't know what's going on. It's happening in London. It's happening in UK. It's happening everywhere. A woman can rape her husband.
Okay. Thank you.
Diana, go ahead.
Yeah, the difference is that in London, you can report it, and if you report it, something will be done. In Nigeria, if you report it, the police might even rape you too. That's the difference.
They will tell you it's a domestic armada. What are you talking about? Or how do you think a man will come out and say, oh, I was raped by my wife, or I was raped by somebody else? And the people with power, money, politics, like I heard the word politics. Yeah, politicians do this. People in power, like, well, I'm not there. I'm not in America. I don't know when because we did what or what have you, but if a woman actually was not able to save herself from someone, she will succumb. She will succumb.
You know, you made a very important point. You said that all this is because of gender inequality. So I'm going to start from gender inequality to make a few suggestions on how we can handle these situations. I didn't mention empathy because empathy is a deep-rooted identity, a deep-rooted part of somebody's identity. You recognize yourself in another person, and as
a
such,
person,
you are not able to hurt them without thinking of how you would feel if you were in those shoes. So first of all, it starts with yourself and your mind. Now let's explore gender inequality. It has been said, and statistics have shown, that when you empower a woman, you empower a society. If we empower our girl children, if we empower the women in our society with education, after that education, we empower them financially to be able to get jobs so that they're not depending on anybody for finances, so they do not have to go jump through anybody's hoops or laws, so they can afford to have a decent kind of life. We educate our children, we empower them financially by giving them good employment, and then we get them placed in positions of visibility where they are able to have a say in laws that are made concerning them. For example, if there were many more women in the Senate, I don't think that that law of, I don't know if it's a law yet, you know, like marrying a 13-year-old in Nigeria or making it easier to marry children in Nigeria,
I don't think. As 11-year-old.
Oh, politician.
They said it's as young as 11-year-old. I shared that from my page on the RNF page on Facebook.
Politician.
Go on, Diana.
I said there are politicians in Nigeria that are still 16 years old. There are rich girls that are as young as 15, 16. That's rape.
Okay.
That is rape.
So
that
if there were more people,
like rape, exactly.
If there were more people, more empowered women in the Senate who could, you know, have a say in decisions like this, I don't think that it's slide so far down. So our work is cut out for us, you know, to get our voices heard, to put ourselves in positions of power where we can have a say in decisions that are made concerning women in Nigeria. Now also, we have to focus on a mind shift. We have to, like, teach programs or teach through our programs, encourage people to have a change in their mindset. Some traditions are good, some traditions are sick. The traditions where anybody is made to feel like a second-class citizen or anybody that is belittled or anybody that is considered less than, such traditions should be thrown out the door. But we must not throw the good parts of us out with the bad parts. We have to be able to identify what colors us bad and what colors what impacts negatively on a society and work on that. Also, Diana said that people wreak havoc on other people because they feel they can get away with it. It is very true. So it is important also that laws in Nigeria be tweaked to have more teeth in defending the women, which is why I'm very happy with what Wale has done with Avawa. So if we implement Avawa, if we find ways to put Avawa on ground in Nigeria and in different parts of Africa, it will go a long way to give teeth to the law, to the laws that protect women and children against all kinds of violence, including sexual violence in Africa. The physicality of a woman raping a man is still kind of strange to me. I know Nikki insists that a woman can rape a man, a woman can rape her husband.
Okay, let me tell this. I understand you. It's a big I mean, it's almost when you hear it.
You don't have to go into, but understand
I'm
that.
I'm just going to give you an example.
Understand that the woman is not physically as strong as the man, and the man's body is wired in such a way that if he does not want to participate, he will not participate. So at this point, women still are the most vulnerable population when it comes to that particular scenario. So we have to empower the women to be able to, and protect them against such violence. Our young boys, they will become the men of tomorrow who, if we do not protect today, will fall victim to violence like rape and perpetuate it and keep the cycle of violence going. So through our programs, through our reach out programs, through our educational programs, we have to call on the women to wake up, take our sons by the hands, and teach them to be men. Ask our husbands to stand up, step in, and teach our sons to be better men. Seriously, because our young boys today will be the men of tomorrow. And we, the women, we are the hands that rock the cradle. We have a say. We have a very powerful say. We just have to recognize that. Please go ahead. And after Nike, Godfrey will say something. I think Godfrey has something to say from Kenya. Go ahead, Nike.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to, you were saying that you don't understand how the a woman can rape a man. So I just wanted to picture this to you. Like, you know, when you have this, there's this thing we do in Africa, especially in Nigeria, you have this thing we call housemate. So, and mothers mothers not always there, father is not always there, but they trust the housemate to be the one rearing the children, maybe when they to give them their bath.
Now, that's a different situation where an older woman molests the child. The child does not know what is going on. This is an innocent child who is still trying to come to terms with understanding the changes in his body. He doesn't understand what is going on. This is a classic case of molestation, a woman molesting a young child.
But this person that gave an evidence was like an 18-year-old, so which we can see as a sin. But what happened was because he came with his girlfriend, and the housemaid knew that there is manipulation, more like it, but... Yeah, if you don't want me to tell your mom and dad what you do, you're going to have to do the same thing to me. From there, they became sex partners in the house. She got pregnant. So, but you would, it's not even, it's more like the power. And you've seen people that have the top rank, like she's the boss, she's the CEO of this, but because a cute boy came in to look for a job, and the next thing, you don't get this job if you don't do this. So we've seen it in different ways like that. You understand what I'm saying, Auntie Regina?
All right.
Some CEOs, yeah.
But
you
say so, it's
if we decide to go into that, the truth is that we will talk about that for weeks. The thing is that in Nigeria,
yes.
many, even when it comes to acting, like you want to have a profession as an actress,
yeah.
or you want a profession in a bank, the truth is that it is, sleep with me, I give you a job. That is one of the most prominent ways to move ahead in Nigeria. It is a known fact for men and women. That
thank
is
you.
A fact.
Thank you.
Because
thank
that's
you.
What
But our focus today, like I had said earlier, is to celebrate the women who have been able to go from being victims to being survivors. That would be our focus today. And also to show the brilliance of the work produced by Ms. Charles, that it is possible to come out of such a dark situation. It is possible to journey from darkness to light and use the negative that happened to you and turn it into a positive. So understand that because something bad happened to you does not make you a bad person, a damaged person, or you can rise above the situation. And that is a message we want to leave our listeners today with. And I would like to thank our listeners from all over the world. Thank you for calling in, even though I wish you would have spoken out some more. Thank you, Godfrey, from Kenya. Thank you, Professor Minimasi. Thank you, Dr. Eze. Thank you, Nike, for calling in. Thank you to our executive director and all our listeners who are pinging across the map. Thank you very much for calling in. And this podcast will be available on the internet, so you can go ahead and listen to us and join us next time for more exciting dialogues on African views. Diana Charles, I want to thank you especially for taking time out, especially for your bravery, and I encourage you not to stop here, to take your work far and wide and be a beacon of light and hope as you champion the cause of breaking that conspiracy of silence that envelops rape victims in communities in Africa. Thank you very much. Now,
thank you.
You're welcome. African Health Dialogues is a healthcare discussion focusing on advice and presentation on AV Radio. It's about awareness, progress and gaps, and cost and accessibility of medical, pharmaceutical products and services within the African and African diaspora communities worldwide. Keep a date with us every weekend as we come to you with special topics. Thank you for joining us today. From your host, Regina Williams, myself, thank you, good night, and God bless.